DRWF, staying well until a cure is found.
My name's Frank Rogers. I'm a marathon runner. I'm also a running coach qualified with England Athletics, and I'm the author of the Coaching a Buck series, which this year included running with diabetes.
When were you diagnosed with type 1, Frank?
Back in Easter 2012.
So not that long ago, I suppose.
Not that long, no.
Came as a bit of a shock, I presume.
It did. Well, I had the massive weight loss, so I knew that there was something wrong. Mm. But I was training for one of my marathons, so I thought the weight loss was tied in with the marathon training that I was doing. Mm. But it was excessive. It was more weight loss than should have been matching up with the training. So I knew something was wrong, and I was going to toilet quite a bit. And I had symptoms, and they had progressively got worse over like the last 6 months. But I kind of ignored them. I thought, no, it'll either go away or it'll get worse. And it didn't go away, it just got worse.
Yeah. And you didn't, presumably it affected your running performance.
Oh yeah, massively. I was finishing runs and I was having hypos, but back then I didn't even know what a hypo was. So I was just massively hungry. Mm. And finish a race, I would do like a 10-mile race, which isn't that far. And I'd finish and I would eat like 3 or 4 bananas in one go. And my coach at the time was saying, why are you eating so much? Because I'm hungry. And that was how I was balancing it, because I still had some insulin being produced. But with the running, the more I ran, the quicker I ran out. So I was having to eat quite a lot. And it didn't matter what I was eating, I was still losing weight. So I thought, this is fine. I can eat what I like. This is great. And that lasted for about 3 or 4 months. And then it just got worse.
Yeah. Did you know anybody else living with type 1?
Oh, no, I knew absolutely nothing about type 1. I didn't even know what diabetes was. I thought, like a lot of people, I thought you got it from eating too many sweets.
Yeah.
That was my level of ignorance back then. Nobody knew had diabetes. It wasn't in the family. And I had no awareness of it. Absolutely none.
If I can ask you, what age were you diagnosed at?
I was 39.
Right.
Yes, late. Right.
Yeah. Well, so you were a bodybuilder but switched to running. Was this before your diagnosis?
Oh, yeah. I started bodybuilding. Originally, was back in school, I was a boxer. So I was a boxer for a number of years, and there was a bit of weightlifting involved in that. And then about 14, 15, I started lifting weights at home. And then I went to the gym. I just did weightlifting all through university. So I went to university, qualified as a solicitor, kept me weightlifting up. But as I was doing the weightlifting, I was also a dancer. And there was a dance company, and that folded when I was about 34, 35. So I had a massive aerobic hole in my training. And to deal with it, because the minute the dance company folded, I put on quite a bit of weight, which I wasn't massively happy with. So in order to replace the aerobic exercise back into my training plan, I took up running.
Right.
And the running kind of took over, because I was a salsa instructor as well for a couple of years. So I was about 34, 35 this time. And then I started running. And like I say, the running just took over. So I transitioned from being a bodybuilder and weightlifting 5 to 6 times a week to running five, six times a week.
Okay. So can you explain your work with England Athletics UK? You're helping them create guidelines for clubs and running groups to help support individuals?
Yeah, England Athletics are great. They're like the governing body for all the athletics. So all the athletics you see on TV, all the running, that all starts at England Athletics. So if you've ever run a race, they do the licensing for it as well. So they're basically in charge of it. And that's where all the sport in England comes from. You get trained up with them, and they have an inclusion policy, which is lovely. And they had this great video, and they had different groups represented all in a line. They had people with dwarfism or restricted growth, people with hearing impairments, people with visual impairments, wheelchair users, people with autism, people with amputations. And there was as I was looking down this line of different people in the inclusion policy, I noticed that I wasn't there.
Right.
And then I did a bit of research on the numbers, and I noticed that if you're living with diabetes, we're the biggest group. And I think there was more people living with diabetes than there were nearly than everybody else in the inclusion policy put together.
Mm.
It wasn't quite that bad, but the numbers were fairly around the same. So I got onto England Flex and said, look, you've got this inclusion policy. It's lovely. It's really nice. What about me? And basically everybody else living with diabetes. Because as you know, living with diabetes is one of these invisible conditions.
Yep.
And the problem with that is it then becomes a barrier. If you don't see yourself represented in sport or anything, and there's no positive reinforcement, then it becomes quite isolating, and you think, I can't run. Because I run marathons. And I thought, when I was diagnosed, I thought, as soon as they explained what diabetes was to me, I thought, well, that's it, I can't run anymore, and I can't run marathons anymore, which was nonsense, of course I can. But at the time, when you get diagnosed, it can feel like your options have massively narrowed down. And part of that is because we're not represented. We bring it on ourselves a little bit, I feel, as a group, because sometimes we can quietly just get on with stuff, and we, rather than be a bit more militant and say, look, I've got diabetes, it doesn't define me, I can still do everything I could do before diabetes, it's just a bit more complicated.
Yeah.
So I went on to England Athletics, and I told them that, look, you need a new policy, because there's this massive section of society that are not being represented, and I think you kind of should. So we had a couple of chats, and I wrote the policy for them. And then they did a focus on a running story, which was about me, because I feel that we needed representation. You need to be able to look at people and say, well, look, they do running. They're not that good, but they can still go out, and they can still compete, and they can still perform, and they can still run at quite a high level. If they can do it, then I can do it. And that was the whole point of it. So that took a while. And now basically they had an inclusion policy, but there was just no mention of diabetes, and now it's there. And the good thing about it is it's for the coaches and the run leaders. So it's the people who are coaching, just so one, that they know what diabetes is, because if they were like me, they wouldn't have a clue what it was. It doesn't take that long to explain it. And then if you get somebody who's got diabetes and they want to run, or they want to do long jump or throw discus or shot put or anything athletic based, it's just how to include them and what they, and just really basic entry level information, so that they can include them. So that was part of it. And then the other part was the representation, just so that if you sat there with diabetes and you think that you can't run, or you can't do long jump, or you can't throw javelins, of course you can. So it's just to raise awareness, and also just be a bit inspiring.
Yeah. So you've written Running with Diabetes. Is this the world's first running book specifically written for anybody living with diabetes who wants to run?
It is, because this was the other thing. Well, when I was doing the stuff with England Athletics, I said to them, look, there's absolutely nothing for us. If I wasn't a coach, because I qualified in 2013, I was an assistant coach in 2011, got diabetes in 2012, then qualified as a full coach in 2013. And what I said to England Athletics is, look, there's nothing for us. There's one book by Sherry Colberg, which is very good, and it's got two pages, which is nice, but that was it. There was absolutely nothing else. And again, if you're wanting to start running, and you like the idea of it, the easiest way to do it is, right, I'll get a book and I'll have a look at it. And there was no books out there. And I thought that was a shame, because I know that for me, I'm living with type 1 diabetes. I know that running is a massive part of how I manage my condition. And if I wasn't running, I know that I would struggle. I would struggle quite a bit. And the management of my diabetes wouldn't be anywhere near as good as it is, and I wouldn't be achieving any of my outcomes that I want. Like, you have different goals about what you want, about how you want your HbA1c level to be. And if I didn't have the running or some sort of sport or exercise, I know that I would struggle massively to manage diabetes.
Can you just explain then how the book helps people living with type 1 like you, type 2, or impaired glucose tolerance?
Sure. If you've got type 1 diabetes like I have, you're more susceptible to depression. And one of the best things, it doesn't have to be just running, because what I've done in the book, I've used running as an example, because there's a very nice quote by Oprah Winfrey saying, running's the best example because you get out of it what you put into it. So I've used, because I love running and I run a lot, I've used running as an example through the book to deliver gateway information. So it's really quite simple entry-level information about nutrition, about weight management, about exercise, and about blood glucose protocols. And it's stuff that you already know, but it's not all brought together. And if you've not done a lot of other reading, it's quite handy to have it all together just in one concise little book, so that you can then use it and help manage your diabetes. So if, like I say, if you've got type 1, you're more susceptible to depression, and running can help with that and exercise can help with that. If you're living with type 2 diabetes, you're more susceptible to cardiovascular disease or heart disease. And the best thing to help combat that is exercise. And if you've got impaired glucose tolerance, or what they call pre-diabetes, then exercise is a massive way that you can manage that condition and hopefully stop it developing into type 2 diabetes.
Yeah. So what essential information does it give you to better understand how your diabetes affects the way your body works? What happens when you run, why it happens, and how you can incorporate this into your training?
Sure. The way I do it is I talk about the benefits of running. It's actually the benefits of exercise, but again, I'm doing it all through a window of reference of running. And I go through the physical, the mental, and the spiritual benefits that you can get from exercise. The first is longevity. You're going to live longer. If you do a bit of exercise, it can be running, can be walking, can be swimming, anything at all. All the research says that you're going to live a bit longer. Durability. Not only are you going to live a bit longer, but you're also going to be more robust. Your skin's going to be better. You're going to look younger. Your blood pressure's going to be better. And your cholesterol's going to go down. So that's some of the physical benefits. The mental benefits improves mood, can improve your body image, can improve your self-esteem, alleviates anxiety, and can help combat depression. And then the spiritual benefits are there's self-awareness, productivity, and creativity. So that can all boost it up for you. When I was first diagnosed back in 2012, one of the big impacts I had with me was I had depression for a while. Not massively. And one of the things that helped me deal with my depression at the time was the running. Because it releases the endorphins, it helps deal with the anxiety. And the more I ran, the less depressed I felt. And then eventually I was able to return to work. And running and exercise was a massive part of that. So that's the physical, mental, and spiritual benefits. You've also got what I put in the book is I separate weight management from nutrition, because what I've found in my reading is a lot of people will lump nutrition and weight management together, and they're kind of two different things. There's a lot of the same terminology used, and there's this push at the minute with diets. Well, there's been a push with diets for a while, and my main issue with diets is that they don't work for everybody. I know they don't work for me, and not everybody likes them. And they can be a little bit restrictive. And what they do is when you've been told, look, you need to go on, there's this push for low carb diets at the minute, but they don't explain what carbohydrate is, which is not very helpful, and they don't explain how it works. So what I did is I've got a separate chapter on weight management, just saying, look, this is this is how you can maintain your weight, because everybody, all the literature talks about losing weight or gaining weight, and most people are kind of all right where they are, and they don't want to lose or gain weight. They just want to maintain the weight that they've got. Or if they do lose weight, they want to manage the weight that they've lost, and they want to keep it the same weight. Alternatively, there's quite a lot of people who need to put on a little bit of weight, and they kind of get, I feel they get ignored a little bit. So what I'll try and do is include everybody and say, look, this is how weight management works. It's not overly complicated, but there's a little bit of science in there. And because I'm doing such a narrow focus, because all I'm really talking about is running or exercise and diabetes, it means that I can really narrow the focus, so I can go quite deep with the information without it being overwhelming.
Yeah.
Which takes me on to the nutrition quadrant. I used to struggle massively with nutrition because the information can be, it's information overload. As soon as you start looking at nutrition, everybody's got a different opinion. They don't agree, which is confusing. And you think, look, I want to know about nutrition. I see stuff on the news, in the TV, in the papers, and they all say something different. And you think, you know what, I'll leave it alone, I'll just carry on. So what I've done is I've just cut through all the noise. I said, look, here's a really basic entry level of what nutrition is. And I've come up with the nutrition quadrant, which is carbohydrates, protein, fruit and vegetable, and fat. I said, look, that's the four things that you need to know. And this is what I've done is I've made it a little bit technical, because it needs to be a little bit technical. Because when you eat, your body will convert these four basic food types into different materials. So your carbohydrates will get turned into glucose, which we know about. Your protein will get turned into amino acids. Your fat will get turned into fatty acids. And the fruit and vegetables get turned into vitamins and minerals. And once you start using different terminology and saying, look, you've got food, and we do food, I go through food labels and how to read them. But once you convert the food into actual resources, which is what your body does, you then open the gateway, so you can start talking about how the body works. And then I go into the running triangle, which is how exercise works and how your body basically generates energy. You've got muscle fibers, fuel tanks, and energy systems, and that ties in. But you can't go into the running triangle until you've done weight management and the nutrition quadrant. So like I said, you need this base level gateway information that I then build on. So I've gone through the book in a progressive way. So if you started halfway through the book, you think, hang on, this is a bit complicated. Whereas if you start with chapter one and then work through the book, with what I tried to do is build up base information, which we can then develop.
Yeah.
And to help you run or exercise, and also to help better understand how diabetes works. Because I feel that the explanation we get sometimes can be a little bit dumbed down. It's like, you need insulin. I say, okay, I need insulin. But it's never really explained what insulin is or how it works, really. And what I put in the book is glucose homeostasis, which sounds like a very fancy title, but it's not overly complicated. And if it's the only bit of science that you need to know, it might take you a couple of times to read through it, but once you get it, you get it. And that's kind of, it makes it a lot easier to understand how diabetes operates. Because what I've found in a lot of my research is, some people, they'll get diabetes and they can be massively isolated, which is a shame, and they don't really understand it. And because they don't understand it, they find it hard to talk about and explain to somebody else.
Yeah.
So that's the running triangle or exercise triangle. And because I can talk about glucose homeostasis, I talk about the role of insulin and the role of glycogen, and because these are two different hormones that your pancreas produces or doesn't produce. Because for years I thought that my pancreas was broken, because I heard that a lot. So, oh, your pancreas is broken, you've got diabetes, fine. And again, there's a lot of misinformation out there. If you've got type 1 diabetes, your pancreas isn't broken, it's just the beta cells in your pancreas that don't work, or they work a little bit but not very much. But when I was doing the book, I thought, hang on, if there's beta cells, there must be alpha cells, and there are, and they're in your pancreas, and they're what produce glycogen, so that when you get stressed or when you do high intensity exercise, your body produces glycogen, which breaks down the stored glucose in your body, which is stored as in your muscles and your liver, and that raises your blood glucose levels. So if you're doing something like high intensity exercise, like sprinting or weightlifting, that will raise your blood glucose levels, which is can be counterintuitive, because if you go for a walk, if you do slow running, then this will lower your blood glucose levels. And it's never really explained why there's this difference between how your blood glucose level is affected by different types of exercise. So what I do in the book is I talk about different types of running. You've got your slow running, or slow intensity running, your medium intensity running, and your high intensity running. Now, with your slow intensity running or low intensity exercise like walking, over time this will lower your blood glucose levels. And I put in all the science of why that works and how it operates. With your medium intensity exercise or running, over time that's mostly going to lower your blood glucose levels. And with your high intensity, you're sprinting or your weightlifting or something like that, I explain that this is going to raise your blood glucose levels, and it's going to raise it over an extended period.
Yeah.
So what we do with that is we then develop that and say, look, this is how it is for running. And then in the book, I talk about cross training, and then using all the information that you've built up as you read through the book, you can then apply this information to different types of exercises, or just even different types of activity, like going on holiday.
Yeah.
And it kind of helps, I feel, because it's giving it to you. What I try not to do is talk down and say, look, this is just how it is. Make it fairly positive and fairly simple. Okay, we're dealing with quite complicated science, but it's not that complicated. And if you explain it clearly, then
we'll understand.
Well, that's it. Yeah,
and I think a lot of people want to know more. And we very much always talk about good self-management, and the more knowledge you have, the better you can deal with it. So I think your explanations there about low, medium and high intensity. And we've done an interview recently talking about, he called it high intensity walking, but it is about lowering your blood glucose and mixing up your speeds when you're doing the walking, which is exactly what you've just been talking about, to help people to lower their blood glucose, especially if you're living with type 2.
Mm. But with the type 2, there's this massive push at the minute where they seem to be focusing on diet. And what I tend to say about that is it's hard to sit on a chair that only has one leg. And what I mean by that is, if your diabetes self-management just focuses on medication or just diet, you're basically trying to sit on a chair that only has one leg.
Yeah.
And you can do it. You can do it for a bit. But it's a constant balancing act, and at some point you're going to slip off and you're going to land straight on the floor.
Yeah.
So what I try to do is, the way I manage my diabetes is a four-column approach. I have education, so I read as much as I can. I've been on the Daphne course. I know you do wellness days, which are fantastic, because it's the group learning experience. Because if you just reading stuff online, education, it can be a bit dry, whereas if you get information in a group session, that's much better, because if something's not clear, you can say, hang on, I didn't get that, and then you can go back. And usually when you're surrounded by a peer group, how you manage your diabetes will be completely different to how somebody else will manage their diabetes, because we're all individuals and we all have slightly different demands that we need and slightly different lifestyles. And getting in a group experience where there's other people who would like us, your peer groups, is massively helpful, because then I find that the information that you can transfer, the education bit of it, is brilliant. So that's the first bit. I look at nutrition a lot, and so that's the second bit, because you need to know what you're putting into your body and how your body responds to it.
Yeah.
So that's the second bit. The third bit's exercise, which is me running. And then the fourth bit is medication. So, because I have to have the insulin.
Of course.
Because it's there. But if I didn't do the education, the nutrition or the exercise, I'd be sat on that chair with just one leg.
Yeah.
And I would slip off all the time. I know I would. Whereas if you're sitting on a chair that's got four legs, it's a lot more stable. And if you don't get one of the bits quite right, you've still got this three-legged chair, which is a lot easier to stay on it. So that's kind of how I deal with my management. I just want to talk really, really quickly about the five natural running body types.
Okay.
Most people have got an awareness of the different types, body types are out there. I mean, these are somato types. They were developed back in the 1940s. And you have the ectomorph, you endomorph, and you mesomorph. And the problem with these body types is they don't really work.
No.
It didn't work back in the 40s. and they got developed to the Heath-Carter system, where you have a bit of one, a bit of the other, and then a bit of, and you end up with three different points, a point system. You have three different points, so you're not actually one body type or the other. So what I've done in the book is I've developed the idea of body types further, and I've come up with five natural running body types. You have the bear, the horse, the hound, the wolf, and the fox. Mm. And what I've done with that is I've gone through bone structure, muscle, fat, and metabolism. And as soon as you read the book, you should be able to identify where you sit and what your natural running body type is. And once you've got an awareness of that, basically, I'm a bear because I'm quite big. I've got a big bone structure. I can put muscle and fat on quite easily.
Yeah.
And I've got a fairly slow metabolism. Once you've got that awareness, you can then tailor your training so that you can focus on the bits that you're good at and on the bits that you need to develop or you want to develop. So everybody comes to exercise from a slightly different place. And once you identify it, what your natural running body type is, you can then target your training. Because what I put in the book is I put in a 52-week training program, and they explain how the training program works. So for each week, I say, look, this is the aim. This is my goal for my training session. This is the different elements of the running triangle that I want to focus on, and this is why I'm doing it. And then I tie it all together in an overarching goal, so that I can say to you, look, this is the goal for this year for 52 weeks. Here's the individual goals for each training session, and this is why we're doing it. Because I think it's massively important to have goals, and you have like a long-term goal, and then you have interim goals like steps going up to the next level.
I
also put in three different marathon training plans, and again, I explained these are about 16 weeks long.
Yeah.
And they say, look, here's your goal. Here's how we're going to get to it. And here's a 16-week training plan with each day you've got a different goal. Some days the goal is to recover and do nothing, because that's important. Oh. You can't crack on it every day. So you need to recover a little bit. And again, it's just explaining why it works and how it works. And that's tied into the natural running body types as well, because if you know where you are, at a starting point, you can know what you can develop and what you can train up.
Sounds brilliant. And we've got a copy which you've very kindly left with us. Do you just want to talk about where how much the book is and where it's available?
Sure. The book's £14.99. It's available on Amazon. Originally, it was just available as a hard copy, and then I had a couple of people tell me that they have vision issues, so it's now available on the Kindle as well. And it's available in America. It's on Amazon. So it's what I wanted to do. I wanted to keep it as reasonable as possible, because I want to help as many people as I can. I don't it to wanted it to be as accessible as possible. So like I say, it's on Amazon. It's $14.99.
DRWF, staying well until a cure is found. Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora Media production for DRWF. Copyright 2020 Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.